Good morning, everybody. For those of you who have waited for us, I can understand that this can be extremely unpleasant, and we apologize for that. I think having a hotel so far away from the meeting venue was the root cause of this problem. And the cause of that was the late organization of the meeting. The cause of that was myself. So I'm responsible for this lateness, and I apologize to you for that. The morning we have had has actually been fascinating. We have had one of the most constructive open exchanges around the subject of the relationships between professional societies and competent authorities and the Commission, because Owen had the good grace to give his talk in the bus, in the traffic jam, which is actually fabulous. He will summarize it for you. I would love to be here for this session, but unfortunately I have a family emergency that Anna Rita is going to help me solve. So I asked Nick Jones to chair for me this morning, which he has kindly agreed to do. Okay. I'll be back in half an hour. Owen, the floor is yours and Nick's. And thank you, everybody. And again, I sincerely apologize for any delay you have had to live through.
Thanks, Nigel. I think we understand. Owen, this should be a fantastic presentation because you've already had a practice run on the bus. So for the benefit of those that were here, the floor is yours.
Okay, good morning. Thank you. Good morning again to my companions from the traffic jam. So my talk will be shorter than the one I gave on the bus, I think, but it's essentially interactions between professional society from the field of hematopoietic stem cells and the competent authorities. I have no slides, okay, so there's nothing to see as such. So, very briefly, I'm an employee of EBMT, responsible for the JC accreditation program, but that also encompasses legal and regulatory affairs. EBMT is a society, it's around 40 years old, over 4,500 members in over 50 countries. Principal pillars of EBMT are science, education, and quality. The aim of the mission of the society is to save lives of patients with blood diseases, but also to care for our donors. In terms of context, we're looking at around 40,000 hematopoietic stem cell transplants in Europe per annum. The activity of the society revolves around studies, retrospective studies as well, education, training, accreditation, standards, and essentially sharing experience and sharing knowledge through virtual and through in-person encounters. Transplant is indicated for many conditions which are officially rare diseases. And one feature of rare diseases is the necessity to pool data and knowledge, because at the level of an individual center or even at the level of an individual country, there is simply not enough cases or data or in fact or knowledge to really be effective. So the idea is to pool data and practice across borders. So in that sense, professional societies like EBMT, collaboration and international collaboration is part of our DNA. It's a field which is constantly being pushed. So even though this is a 60-year-old medical technology, transplantation is not static, it's dynamic. And this pushing the limits of what we know and what we can deliver to our patients. The most obvious manifestation recently has been the approval in the United States of CAR T cells for ALL. These living medicines, so drugs based on human cells. Which means that the science is frequently ahead of the regulation or ahead of the laws. And that forces then often a reaction from the competent authorities, whether it's the FDA, the European Commission, the EMA, or the individual national authorities as well. I'm sure in the level in the field of ART, similar phenomena are happening as well. And transplantation is intrinsically complex, very costly, and has high risk, high mortality associated with the actual therapy. In terms of regulations, EBMT has historically been a very physician-driven society, and physicians, I think, in all medical areas, at least historically, have tended not to engage with the regulations and not to engage too much with the competent authorities. There was a perception that the regulators don't understand what we're trying to do, the perception that I am the expert, don't tell me how to treat my patients. It could be openly hostile to regulations and to standardization. But that's changed, I'm happy to say. I think I can personally say that in my 15 years working for the EBMT, that there's been a significant change in the last 5 or 6 years in terms of openness and interest in what is happening at the European Union level and then at national level. So this is a change from how much money can we get from the European Union to do the things we want to we really have to talk to the European Union and we really have to demonstrate that we are a trusted partner. And maybe somewhere in some time, maybe funding will come, which will be interesting to us. But the funding is not the the prime motivation to be there. And it's forced some change in the society as well. We've had to become more professional, more transparent, more prepared to explain who our partners are, our stakeholders, our interaction with commercial interests, etc. And happily, at the same time as the EBMT, I think, has been going through this evolution, the European Union has been going through a similar evolution, and I would say at the same time in competent authorities at national level, the same thing is happening. A realization that the professional societies can be trusted, that we have things to bring to the discussion, that we have data, which is often a big gap for the competent authorities. And also that we have not just negative things to say, that we're not just complaining, but that we are coming forward trying to offer solutions to problems we have as well. And that's really the reason why I'm here today representing the EBMT in this project. But EBMT is also in EuroGTP2, and we're also in the Vistart joint action as well. And that's because the leadership in the EBMT has decided to invest my time and other people's time in actually being here and interacting and engaging as well. And I have to say as well that a lot of this is based on individuals and individual personalities. So I think you would all agree that much of the value of events like this, and I think Nigel said it at the beginning, is the casual conversation you have over coffee or the dinner or the person you sat beside on the bus back to the hotel. Those spontaneous conversations can often be the beginning of a more formal dialogue, which can often turn into a much more formal interaction like a project or something similar. Think as well that the professionals are seeing the problems that the competent authorities have. I think there's an increasing sensitivity to the challenges that you face. In practical terms, simply not having enough people to do all of the things that are in your mission. You may have the people, but do you have the expertise in that group of people? You have a mission which seems to be constantly expanding. Yesterday, one of our colleagues talked about turning tissue inspectors into ART inspectors and vice versa. So there's a lot being asked of you. And then I would say at the level of the European Union, and perhaps in those countries where there are more than one competent authority, from outside it becomes obvious that people aren't talking to each other internally. So often the outsider has a better idea of what's happening across all of the components of the European Union better than some of the people within those organizations. And then there's probably an appreciation for what Otto von Bismarck said, who was the Prime Minister of Prussia and ultimately Germany. He said, politics is the art of the possible. And politics is not necessarily getting the best solution for everybody, but is getting the possible solution given certain circumstances. So this evolution of, we'll call it empathy, we've seen it in other organizations as well. And with the opportunity that's there with the evaluation of the Tissue and Cells Directive, and this invitation, very open invitation that was extended by the Commission to all of us, all the stakeholders, an alliance or a consortium was formed by EBMT, by the European Blood Alliance, the European Association of Tissue Banks, and the European Eye Bank Association. These four organizations have sat down together. We've tried to identify common interests through the directive, and we've tried to present ourselves to the Commission in conversations as a single interest group. Essentially, we're lobbying, but we're representing interests that we think are relevant to the discussions that are being had by the European Union and by among the competent authorities. So again, I think it's not complaining, it's stop complaining, and now we start acting. We start trying to provide solutions. So clearly, if I can use the expression, we are the experts. We are the people who are treating those patients. We're looking after those donors every single day of our professional lives. And we can help plug the gap in your knowledge. There is, I would say, a very strong openness to having, for example, competent authority inspectors go to some of the meetings or congresses simply to learn what is happening in the field, what's coming down the line in the next 5 years, anticipating developments, seeing where the technology is changing. I mentioned data. EBMT data registry is around for around 40 years, 500,000 transplants. Nothing like it in the world. Even the United States registry, which is funded from federal funds, has fewer transplants entered into that registry. And the, if you like, growing awareness from the professionals that this tool, which was invented and developed and maintained as a clinical research tool, as a tool to record your work and then to use it to develop, it's not just restricted to those users. There is a large number of stakeholders outside of the medical field, but who need to know what's going on, who are interested to know what trends are we seeing, what are the outcomes of these transplants. We want to see in novel therapies what is the impact on the patients as well. If we're using new drugs with our donors for those poor mobilizers, Plerixafor, is it affecting them long term? How do we follow up? We're doing that. And now we're realizing that, hey, you guys maybe might be interested to know this as well. So there's a discussion to be had about giving you access to that information. We may need some support from you, but I'm sure we can find mutual needs that can be satisfied through the sharing. And the mantra of report once, use often, should guide all of these discussions. Please don't give your medics and your scientists a burden of reporting the same information in 2 or 3 or 10 different places. Let's rationalize and synergize, etc. And a lot of that is driven by the very nature of our field, rare diseases. So I go back to that again. To me, it doesn't make sense that Slovenia would have a donor follow-up registry just for Slovenia, for instance. There is one transplant center in Slovenia. the amount of data that they would need to gather to get a critical mass of data will never be achieved. Much better to put it into one place, mix it with the other data, and then have some constant observation of trends, not just in one country, but across the countries. So, to conclude, a couple of points about perhaps a vision of where professional societies and competent authorities, and I include the European Union as a competent authority, where we might be in the next, let's say, 5 years. We would hope for increasing levels of complementing each other's activities, this synergy or synergizing. In why? In pursuit of safety and quality, in pursuit of the best options and the best care for our patients and for our donors. We would like to hear more and see more development about the networking between the competent authorities, because we know, as an international organization, of this continuous variation in interpretation between one country and another country, and within countries. There is a problem in the how, within the same authority, particular aspects are being interpreted. Share those experiences. Look for solutions that have been found in one country and apply them in another country if possible. And those networks shouldn't wait for the Commission to say it's okay or for some decision to be made. Talk to yourselves, those email networks, etc., etc., etc. And to conclude, keep talking to us, keep asking us questions, and you'll find, I think, that we're open to that dialogue. We want to keep those channels open, and I think that there is much more that we could do together which will help both our missions and, as I say, reach that objective of giving good care to the people who are depending on us. Thank you.
Well done, Owen. You set a compelling vision there for improved working for the benefit of people. Does anyone have any questions for Owen, which I'm sure we've got a few minutes to take? I think you've got some questions on the bus. So maybe there's some more now. Okay. I was going to ask you, Owen, What one thing could a competent authority or the EU or a pan-European regulatory body do to support the shared goal of improved patient care? But I think you kind of set it out. But any sort of just one thing?
So I think in the area of data. So we have 500,000 transplants. But we are very conscious that we have a difficulty with completeness of data and quality of the data. Okay. Why is this a problem? We are asking for substantial amounts of data from overburdened, overworked transplant teams. In our national congress, our annual congress in Marseille this year, we had an American speaker, and she started by saying, in our center we have 4 data managers. And I could just see all of the Europeans' hearts just dropped because they don't have any data manager, or they have one, but it's also a physician, etc. So that figure of the data manager is also a person with skill, with understanding of what they're doing, of what they're entering as well. And that resource is not sufficiently common among the transplant centres. As a society as well, we're also building a new registry. We're moving to a new architecture. This represents an investment of about 1.5 million euros. Significant investment by us. Clearly, we're the first people who want to have this. We want to have better quality data to do better research and better publications. But built into that is a concept of ultimately sharing, giving access to this data to other stakeholders. Properly anonymized, properly synthesized, etc., but recognizing that you have an input. So I think that if we had a buy-in from competent authorities, which also translated into support either at the level of the individual institutions, so that a competent authority could support data management in a region or a city or whatever. That could be important. Ultimately, the saying is rubbish in, rubbish out. And we don't want that. So it's equally in the interest of the authorities that we're collecting good data. So any kind of support initiatives that could be explored would be probably interesting. Yeah.
Great, thanks, Owen. So good quality data is absolutely critical. Has your registry got a sexy name to attract viewers, visits?
It's the EBMT registry.
No.
Doesn't qualify as sexy, no, I'm saying.
Okay. Great, thanks. So, Shalomi, you're going to talk about cord blood banking.
Yeah.
The floor is yours.
Yeah. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I hope everybody's listening when I'm staying so far from that, from the micro. Is that okay? You cannot listen? Well, I try to. Well, it's difficult. Well, I have to choose the presentation first of all. Which is. Talking about the future development that a medical director waits from the Arctic project. So, to have an idea, this is not working. No, this is one that is not working. Thank you. To have an idea of the figures, the actual situation about hematopoietic stem cell transplantation. So, the last 10 years, hematopoietic stem cell transplantation increased a lot, three times, and we hope it's continuous growing. It's expected that is going to happen. So the numbers are already very big. And the sources of hematopoietic stem cells are three main streams: bone marrow, mobilized peripheral blood, and cord blood. Increasing transplant activities related with a lot of things that improve together. A significant reduction in mortality, improvement conditions of the condition regimens, improvement of supportive care, increasing age of the patients that are integrated in these procedures, increasing the age of the donors too, and increasing the clinical indications. With all together, it's able to do that. Also, a lot of indications, clinical ones that now is it can be done by this treatment. And also, a continuous expansion of international registration of hematopoietic stem cell donors and also cord bloods, and a centralized international research system for unrelated donors. And for the last, but also very important, is the development of HLA typing methodologies with a better discrimination among donors and patients. So, can you move it? Looking at what's going on in Europe and also in the United States, we can see that the figures are pretty much the same regarding the identical siblings transplantations, unrelated donors, haplo, and also cord blood. In Portugal, cord blood is a little bit shinier than related to the other sources of hematopoietic stem cells, but the picture around the world is similar. We can also look at that. The type of source by transplant and by donor type, we can see. Sorry, this is not working. This is not working. So we can see that the unrelated donors are winning some ground here. And we are looking, for example, for the cord blood, has been some enthusiastic enthusiastic use of that, and we started to go down, and the upload transplantation started to increase. Why that? Yeah. Why that? I'm able to do it. Why that? Let's look, for example, at the registries of the donors, the adult donors of hematopoietic, so the stem cell donors. So the Spanish registry, for example, 40% of the patients has no donor at all. And if we look at general registry, that is taken as a very efficient registry, we can see that 2 months after research, we have around 50% of patients with donor. And if we look 6 months, we have 75%. So we have 25% of patients without donor. But this figure is much higher in countries with a bigger genetic diversity, and that could be over 50%. If you're looking at the time taken between the decision, the transplantation, until the procedure of transplantations, on average, and this is data from REDMO, this is the Spanish registry, we have 48 days for the search of a donor and 26 days to have a workup or to have a product to transplant. Cord blood, we can have this in 1-2 weeks. Now, just to have an idea what is going on, the evolution of this, for example, looking at the Caucasian patients, so Northwestern European origin, we can see an improvement in the 19th until today, an improvement related to the donors for the patients. But if we look, for example, patients transplanted, we have 50%. But we have also some patients, around 30%, that is not able to be transplanted because the time of searching and the workup is so long that this clinical condition is so badly that they don't have any more indications for transplant. So we have only also 11% of these patients, Caucasian ones, without a donor. But if we look for a non-Caucasian patients, the figures are very different. We started 19 without nothing, and we have now, when the search is finding, around 36%, 50% of donors. But we only are able to transplant 32% of them. 18%, they have clinical conditions that going to deterioration, so they don't have any more conditions for transplant. And we have 50% without donor. Cord blood can be part of the solution for that. But we have to look also as the cord blood unites worldwide inventory. And if we look at that, we can see that a big part of those unites in this worldwide inventory, there's no quality enough to be applied, especially in adult patients. And if we look also the rate of utilization, we can see that really the use of the unites are related with a bigger concentration in cells. Looking also at the HLA typing, we can see that only a small percentage of the unites have HLA typing in this, in all these antigens. The greatest part of them, of this inventory, is a lower discrimination in this typing. This, in fact, the number of unites that are registered, they are not efficient. They are not able to use in transplantation. The real numbers is much lower. And so all this inventory, big one, these unites that are not able to use in transplantation, they also contribute to the prices of these unites, which is a very important issue too when we are going to make a transplant. So, despite increasing donor pool in the registries, there are still a large percentage of patients with indication for hematopoietic stem cell transplant without an answer. We also see that racial or ethnic minorities patients are underrepresented on donor registries worldwide. Looking at worldwide cord blood inventory, there are a number of factors that limit their usefulness and accessibility. So a large proportion of these units have a cellular content not suitable for use, especially in adult patients. for which the indications of cord blood transplants are increasing too. Only a fraction of these units are class 2 type it at allelic level, which at least we delay very much the search of the donor. And the quality of this inventory is very heterogeneous. So, cord blood could be really a solution for this gap that we have today. Anyway, it is important because it's very easy to harvesting maternities that respond to the population with these ethical minorities. Also has less stringent compatibility criteria in level of HLA. And is available, is off the shelf, so in the urgent transplant this is a very good solution. But it is necessary to build confidence in cord blood, which leads to a dissemination for its use by the transplant units. It is necessary to harmonize practices in cord blood and quality of units, establishing common good practices within member states and guarantee the best level of health care for patients and donors. Looking at the European directives and the legislation and cord blood operation, there are also a lot of issues. So, more or less, many countries now regulate cord blood products. For example, in the United States, the FDA and AABB regulated all these products. At European level, also the Commission directives also take care of this, Canada, Australia, and a lot of them. But dissimilarity through this regulation is compliance with GMPs to produce a safe and effective product for this intended use. Portugal also did it and make the transposition of these directives to our internal law. In 3 laws, we integrated all the directives, European ones. They cover all the points that are integrated these directives in these 3 laws. And we have also in Cord Blood Bank a lot of standards. We have Portuguese ones, similar to the French ones. We have the FACTnet Core. We have some Spanish ones. We have the guide, the European guide. We have also a lot of them. And also, at the end, we have also the recommendations from ARTICS. We have also a lot of process and procedures inside the cord blood bank. It starts with donor assessment and finish with distribution expedition and follow-up of the patient, the recipient. We have a lot of things to support this, traceability, packaging, equipment, facilities, training of the staff, validations, a lot of things. We have also in the maternities to training the teams, the collection teams, recruitment, to assessment the donor, also to implement them a quality system in this process of collection for cord blood banking. We have the collection itself, the techniques and training and nurses and also obstetrical people, labeling, traceability, the processing and cryopreservation, storage. We have also the qualification of the units at the laboratory level. We have treatment on non-conformities, qualifications of everything, equipment, people, validations. We have verifications, calibrations, laboratory guidelines, clinical guidelines, good manufacturing practice, legislation, international standards, clinical audits, maternity audits too, auto-inspections, international accreditations, recalls, biovigilance, competent authority inspections, notifications, monitoring indicators, activity plans, activity reports, contingency plans, change control, risk assessment, development protocols, stability programs, availability and data supply, towing and validation of the towing. Well, we have a lot of opportunities to make mistakes, to do it differently. We have really a huge... This is one I remember, but there's more. So, additionally, these issues, and despite the directives, standards, inspections, audits, accreditation, the variability of results and outcomes is huge. Further, the discrepancy of results between cord blood and cellular therapy laboratories from the transplant units is also a reality. Because these transplant units don't do this in routine, is exceptional. So, the training of the staff, the limited experience in towing and washing procedures of units of cord blood, samples of very small volumes, samples that have been towed, that have very difficult to evaluate them in cytometry and other. So all things, all this together is our difficulties that are additional to that. So with Artix, as a director and responsible for a public cordial bank, so I hope very much, too much. I think it's very important to continue this work, to implement them. And so I think that is important to implement a peer-to-peer quality improvement with collaboration programs, peer technical visits, sharing experiences, exchange samples, evaluating the results, and minimize the burden of regulatory oversight. Good sense. We expect that training the competent authority teams, integration of technical experts from other countries in competent authority experts, I think this is a good way of getting harmonization. For example, in Portugal, we have one called Public Cordial Bank. I've been inspected always by the same people. I think it's not good, not for the bank, not for them. Educational sessions, in-person workshops, online events, whatever. Artix training courses in different cordial banks. And this, I think, contributes to improvement performance through active collaboration between cordial banks, promotes harmonization of practice, facilitating practice sharing, knowledge exchange, and benchmarking. I also think the evidence of external validation for using clinical nights and also for the community is also very important and clear that there's through the Artix work. Continuous improvement process of the quality of the nights and safety of donors and patients, and develop an European cord blood bank network, and why not even a European cord blood program. So this is a great opportunity, I think, to ensure success and the true realization of a full potential of cord blood. It is essential that each and every product provided for current and future treatments meets highest quality international standards as well as confidence and transparency. Despite organization of registries, improvements in HLA determinations, improvements in mortality associated with the transplant procedure, we still have a significant number of patients without donor, especially ethnic minorities and rare genotypes. Cord blood can make a useful contribute, but it has to be trust. It has to be a good product. Thank you very much for your attention.
Well done, Shalomi. A tour de force there of the cord blood banking world. I particularly liked your slide with the 7,000 requirements on it. I'm sure there's a room in the top right-hand corner for a few more, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe.
Think
so. Okay, so let's have some questions. I know there's some of you involved with cord blood banking. Christina.
I'm not involved in cord blood banking, but I come from the Italian National Center of Transplants, and I'm very much interested if in your country you have the problem of the preservation of cord blood for private use, for familiar use, which means that you want to keep for possible future use in your family those stem cells. And if this is the case, have you tried to limit it? Because I think this is a big limitation for the availability of cells that for public use, exactly.
Well, Christina, really, this the picture in Portugal, the private banks, it's legal to operate, to collect, and to cryopreserve. But the public bank, as I usually says, because I always go to the maternities and I speak with the mothers, I speak with the professionals in the maternities. So, and I try to clarify without being judged, nothing at all. And the cord blood bank in Portugal, the public one, I have one strategy. This is, I have to fulfill what the registry is not able to do it. So what I'm looking for is those maternities that have this kind of patients. And these, unfortunately, are patients that are, for example, black and others ethnies. They don't have money to go to the private ones. So at the moment, there isn't a conflict between. When I started with the private ones, were thinking that was looking at us as like a threat. Now they are very happy because they stopped to have a contamination unite. So they are profit from our work in the maternities. Well, at least everybody is profit something. But at the moment, I don't feel that there is a competition really, because I'm looking for that small ethnies that are not representative in our adult registry, and these people, they don't look for the private ones. They gave to the public one, and looking at this activity, private one in Portugal, so this is the decision above me. I don't have nothing to do. I don't make any comment at all related to that. I only say to the mother, this is for the patient, whatever is the patient. Doesn't matter who is the patient, where is the patient, is for use for somebody that needs it. And they accept it very well. And as I said, I have the main objective for the moment is to fulfill what the registry is not able to do it. So it's been very quiet to work in the field.
Thank you for your presentation, very interesting. I was just like to know, following a bit Christina's question, for me, because I really don't have no idea on the numbers. Do we know the level of activity, for example, in Portugal or in Europe? What's the percentage of the people that prefer to use the public and the shared bank, or a private and just for family use? Because I'd like to know if there is a big imbalance, because if there is a big imbalance, then we maybe need to do something about it. Do we have those numbers at all? Are these private banks that are mainly for own or family use also registering something in the main registers, or have we an idea of the dimension?
Well, the numbers, I don't have the numbers. I don't know the numbers. What I can tell you that this last year's the private activity is lowering very much. I think it's a crisis. But I suppose they have big inventories, but I don't have any idea how much. I can advance a number, but it will be very wrongly. But they have big inventories, which is not the aim of the public bank, to have a big inventory, but have inventory genetic diversity, especially this genetic that is not represented in the registry, and a high quality unites with a great number of cells, a great percentage of cells, and also very good viability. This is our aim objective. They don't have, the private ones don't have any unite registry in our national registry. I think for the moment they are not allowed to do it. I don't know what will be the future, but for the moment they don't have it available for use.
I'm conscious of time, so we better push on to the next one. Shall I? Before we push on, one question from me, which is similar to the one I asked Owen. Putting yourself in the position of any professional in working in any of the countries, what one thing would you like a competent authority to do to promote your own vision?
I would like, as responsible for the bank, I'd like my competent authority invite experts from other countries for make the inspections. Okay. Different countries each time they come.
That's a good thing. Thank you, Shalomi. Okay, before I invite Borut to talk, just to say that Owen's awaiting a taxi, so when it comes, he'll dash out. So it's not don't be offended by him leaving the table. So, Borut, thank you very much for attending for the 2 days. You're going to now move the agenda on to ART. So the floor is yours. I think we've got enough time for Borut to speak in terms of the plans he had. So over to you.
So, thank you very much. At the beginning, I have to thank the organizer for this kind invitation, for giving the opportunity to professional society, ESHRE, to come out with its own views on UTCD and on views how we can see the future collaboration, interaction, communication with competent authorities. By following yesterday's presentations and discussion, and as you will see also from my presentation, I can come to the conclusion that although we are positioned on different sides, we have very similar views on different aspects of ART, and I think this is very good for the development of the profession and also for future collaboration between us. So just a few facts about ESHRE. This is an international non-profit organization founded in 1984. There are more than 6,500 members from all over the world. It is managed by different committees, and professionals from different professions are organized within 13 special interest groups. There is a special paramedical group. So the main activities of this society is the organization of annual meeting, which is one of the biggest meeting from reproductive medicine. There are 10,000 participants every year. ESHRE organizes also campuses and workshops every year, around 15 campuses in different countries of Europe. There is a very good established certification program for clinical embryologists, nurses, surgeons. We also write guidelines and we support research by giving grants. So after 10 years of implementation of UTCD, it is time to make an overview or analysis of how ESHRE see the benefit of these directives and where we can see the possibility for interaction. So I decided to do the SWOT analysis to present some good points, some weaknesses where we can see, some opportunities where we can go together and improve the system. I think we cannot talk, or there is no need to talk about threats, because there are no threats from my point of view. And let's start with some general view on laboratory conditions and performance. So we can be very happy that now practically every ART lab in European countries has introduced quality control and quality assurance system. This is a very big advantage of this very good European Commission project. So the quality of lab performance is consequently improved. However, we are missing the checking of endpoints of laboratory and consequently clinical work. So there are mostly, usually, there are no checkings of clinical treatments, results, and the perception of quality is quite different from authorities and from laboratory personnel. We see the quality as a constantly high live birth rate before we have our special quality indicators that were presented yesterday. But the most important is to have constantly high live birth rate and healthy newborns. And this is something that we expect to be checked in the future as well. So it is a little bit frustrating for laboratory personnel that main focus of competent authorities is turned to laboratory only. clinical performance is usually out of such control. So this is something that could be joined in the future. Why? Because if we follow, for example, the positive pregnancy tests, like consecutive IVF cycles, as we can see here in yellow column, we can be happy when the results are so consistent. But it is very, very frequently it can happen that there is a gap between positive two optimal groups, and trying to come back and analyze what can cause such a situation is very, very complex process. And we must take in consideration that there are a very important clinical part which influence on the quality of gametes, and also their decision which procedures can be advised and how many embryos to transfer is related also to safety of patients and also the third person, the child. So further about laboratory conditions and performance, we can conclude that the environment in the lab is much better controlled. Sometimes there is too rigorous assessment of quality in the lab. As we can see, there is all the time discussion between grade D, grade C, quality of the air in the background. But we know that there is just slight or maybe no influence on the clinical outcome. So this is a high cost to introduce such a system in the lab. So we also know that there is big differences in the economical status in different European health systems, and it could be much better than to invest money in buying a higher number of incubators for which we exactly know that they can improve the culture conditions. There are improved hygiene standards. Sometimes there is wrong interpretation of microbiological testing results, continuously asking for excessive disinfection for which we exactly know that it can be harmful for live cells, embryos. The equipment, medical devices are better controlled. You usually ask for C mark, especially for culture media. This is something very interesting from our point of view. We think that the quality of media can be assessed by different ways, not looking just C mark. And as we all know, it can happen that pharmaceutical company which have a very good product on the market can lose the C mark. So it is the question, how will you react? Will you immediately not allow to use this this product, or will you come to professional society and ask what can this cost? Because we know that there is a long learning curve by using different culture media. We usually, before introducing new medical devices, we do sibling oocyte studies to see if in our conditions we get the similar results with previous culture media. So this is a quite complex process. Also, consumables is much better controlled now. We tried to use only the system which have mouse embryo assay test performed, but there are not standardized tests. There are two-cell mouse embryo assay, one-cell mouse embryo assay, mouse embryo transfer assay. So it could be good to have standardized assays for consumables and also for culture media. So about culture media, this is something that is very popular in last years to talk about the quality of culture media and long-term effect. From the last annual meeting, we could see very, very interesting reports about the variability in the composition of media at arrival, after storage, after culture, and so in comparison what is CMARC with the real quality of media, there is a big discrepancy. So we think that there is a need for consulting reproductive medicine professional society in such cases, a need for standardization of bioassays for detection of embryotoxic compounds, searching for new quality indicators for culture media. And there are more and more reports about the long-term effect of type of culture media on neonatal outcome of children, protein sources, age of culture media. So we think we must take much more focus on this long-term effect. So need for longer traceability registers that are adjusted for assessing long-term effect of culture media on all offspring. And I would propose to join activities with ASHRAE working group, which work together with pharmaceutical companies, trying to get more information about the production of culture media, testing of culture media. So this could be a good way. Then documentation and personnel. The documentation is much more complete now. However, we assess that there is around half of laboratory work is administrative work, but we know that often there is insufficient number of staff in the lab. So this is also the question, what means quality? We can say that there is much better evidence by introducing standard operating procedures. There is a standardization of laboratory procedures. This means that there is easier learning of laboratory staff. But we are missing the specified qualification, training, and skills for laboratory personnel. We know that there is not organized educational program for ART in most of European countries. There are a couple of exceptions. And by introducing UTCD, there are the personal responsibility became much higher. So according to our survey that was published in Human Reproduction, we saw this situation. There are not a low number of staff. There are 1,700 staff working in European laboratories without organized education. So I would like to remind you on this statement from the directives that staff should be available in sufficient numbers, a training program should be available, and ASHRAE introduced at the time of implementation of UTCD directives the certification program for clinical embryologists. This is today an international educational standard for clinical embryology. But it could have official recognition in European countries. And we see some attempts in different countries which try to recognize this could be also a very good way. So not only certification, we introduced also the ASHRAE CPD system for certified embryologists. So from the January next year, we will have the complete register of certified embryologists. We will follow their professional activities through the period. We will give also the CPD certificate. And you will have also possibility to control the certification, the education of staff working in lab by coming in this European map, where by clicking on a specific country, you will get information about the certification, CPD certification of embryologists from specific country. I think that this will be a very helpful tool for competent authorities. So donation distribution coding, the donor program is much more safer, the storage is safer, transportation is safer, distribution of biological material is safer, but it is very complex process for RT centers, which in comparison with some cryobanks where there is completely uncontrolled use of sperm for home use, for example, there is a big difference in requirements. So we think that there is a need for unification of criteria for distribution of tissues and cell for all institutions. So the coding is also standardized. Maybe there is too complex nomenclature for reproductive cells. We are contacted from some organizations if we can look on their proposal. And there is the statement of ESHRE that in our view it is not possible, perhaps not even desirable, to enter every detail about the cell's tissues into the code. So this is our recommendation. And ESHRE is willing to help the different players in the field with terminology, coding issues, and so on. Registering, reporting, traceability, and vigilance. Now we have all RT establishments registered. This is very good. We have to report about activities in RT centers. But you collect just information about the activities, for example, procurement, storage, distribution, and so on. You don't take information about the laboratory methods, and we know that a lot of laboratory and clinical methods are not evidence-based because of the influence of commercialization. We also report the number of procedures. There is a missing data about their effectiveness. Also about the number of cells and tissues. And we would like to see the report about the number of cells that are collected and what happened with them. The system of data collection is much improved. But we have some numbers, and we can trust in these numbers or not. We will hear from the next presentation. The traceability is improved. As I mentioned, there is a missing register for following long-term effect of ART methods. And the histovigilance is introduced, which is also very good. But we see by discussing with laboratory staff from different countries that competent authorities react sometimes more punitive than educative, and there is no feedback about adverse events, which we think that we can learn a lot from such a report, and this could be very good to have in the future. So I would like to show you that ESHRE organized also campuses with all these problematic topics. This is the campus which is organized at the end of the year in Ljubljana. You are all welcome there. We will discuss about the influence of commercialization, about the safety and quality, how can we measure the process in ART, and how can patients decide which IVF center is the most appropriate for them. So many these problematic points will be discussed here. About register, ESHRE also made analysis, and we saw that there are differences in registers between European countries. There is a proposal how to make such a register, so we propose, but we think you have a powerful and you can make such an idea live. There is also guidance on vigilance and surveillance in assisted reproductive technology. You participated this workshop, but it would be very good to organize such workshops also for all stakeholders. And legislation, surveillance, harmonization of legislation for all tissues, this is very good. There is disharmonized legislation for ART, as we could hear from yesterday and today. It is very good that we have inspection, which is independent from the profession. This is much more objective evaluation of the process. But, of course, consequently, there is a lack of experience from ART. So you set up very strict rules for inspection, and we see that they are sometimes disharmonized between member states in some segments. In general, we can conclude that UTCD resulted in significant improvement in quality and safety. There is a missing general report from EU Commission about your activities, about inspection and reporting, from which we think we can all learn a lot. But as we started directives 10 years ago, I think we were speaking with completely different languages. Today, after 10 years, we can say that we have the same language, and it can be shown also in our new revised guidelines for good practice in IVF laboratories, where all segments of UTCD are implemented and explained. And it is also good to have your project, like writing new guide for tissue and cells, where ART has its own chapter. So I can conclude that competent authorities could focus on a few major issues in the future to improve interaction platforms using also our networks. We can give you the opportunities to be actively present on our meetings. I think this will be very welcome. We can improve registers of activity and follow up, sometimes more in the hands of scientific societies and sometimes in the hands of competent authorities, and to improve safety, quality, efficiency over unfair expectations, commercializations, and consideration of wrong outcomes. So in our society, we have different special interest groups. I think that SIG safety and quality is one of such groups which will very friendly accept your suggestions, then SIG law and ethics, and SIG embryology, SIG andrology, and SIG fertility preservation. So these are six where we manage the things that are connected with tissues and cells. So that's all.
Good work, Borut. You covered the ground there very efficiently. Well done. Good to see Carlos Plancher getting a few references there in learned publications. Well done. So I think what we'll do is, rather than take questions now, if you could store up any questions for Borut, and then we'll take the other Carlos next, if that's all right with you, Carlos. And then we'll have some questions on the ART side of things. I'm presuming we're okay for time, our colleagues. Yeah.
Good morning, everyone. It's my pleasure to be here representing the Portuguese competent authority and looking to the future. We have the opportunity to hear about the present a lot, and in ART field it's my job to take to you to the future, I hope the good future. So my topic is about competent authorities networking in the field of ART, of course. What for the networking? It's intuitive, but I will expand a few words about these five topics. To exchange information on relevant topics. It was already said that the exchange, share experience and ways to solve problems and think about is very important. To reinforce the specificities of the ART field in the global work of the tissue and cells field. To increase traceability in ART, it's a specific issue. To establish robust registries as a guarantee of safety and efficacy, guarantee at least a contribution. And, of course, to have common positions in core issues, to be in dialogue with the EU people. So, to exchange information on relevant topics is, as I said, an intuitive circumstance. The union makes a strength, so it's very important that in each country the problems may be different and the solutions, of course, will be different and you can learn with each other. To reinforce the specificities of ART field means that we must convince the other participants in this big world that we have different perspectives and needs. I put just a list here. We have a specific circumstance that is known as partner donation. That is something strange, but is under the directives. Even partner donations is a little bit difficult to understand when we are talking about lesbian couples, for example, that are not explicit recognized under the present version of the EU directive, because it only talks about heterosexual couples. Of course, non-partner donation, it's the global donation that we can think about. Another specificity is the our outcome. We are not working in the field of function saving or life saving. We are creating life. We are trying to have an healthy baby at the end of all the different procedures that we perform. Although that is similar in other fields, but it's more important in ours, the clinical application in the different member states depends directly from the local, the national legislation. And that increases a lot the problem of the cross-border movements of material or the couples themselves. Also, treatments here in ART field are usually repeated. It's not one donation, it's a repetitive process. And at the same time, the same donation can give the opportunity of several outcomes with freezing embryos, for instance. We are now increasing complexity with the huge field of preservation of the future potential of fertility of people, women particularly. And in some countries, at least, we have another topic of complexity, that is surrogacy. So we are really specific in our activity. The third topic I put here was to increase traceability. One of the issues was already mentioned is the direct delivery of sperm samples. That is completely against the EU concept of traceability and result of what happened with the cells and even the procedure of using the cells. We have a great problem with the cross-border ART couples that move because there are not techniques that are not legal in the origin countries, but also move because It's cheaper to go to a third country. And we have no idea of the results and of these movements. Completely no idea, because there are, and I'll talk about that, registries at national levels. We in ASHRAE trying to have a European global view, but we have no possibility to know from which country of origin are the people that goes to somewhere else. The problem of registries have already been talked about too, but this is difficult at several levels. The directives talk only about cells and tissues, but in our field the outcome, desirable at least outcome, is a baby. And the baby that is healthy in long term, hopefully. So we need a specific registries, and I know that all the fields that I heard in Brussels in the last meeting, all the fields say that a robust registry is necessary in their specific field. So this is a global problem. Of course, as I said, we have in Europe for almost 20 years aggregate registry of the countries. The last one refers to 2013 and was published this month. And that represents over 7 million cycles of treatment in ART and almost 1,500,000 babies born, and for that the number will be much more, because the loss for follow-up and dropout of information is very important at this point. The centers must have the registries of their activity, but then the clinical ones most of the times go somewhere and are not recovered. In the EU countries, only half of the countries has 100% coverage, in spite of 17 of the countries have a compulsory registry. That means that three of the compulsory are not 100% answered. And in, again, our field, one of our needs is to have a registry of detailed cycle-by-cycle characteristics, and this, for now, is still only on work in 12 of the 28 countries. So the ideal characteristics of a registry that we must foresee in the future and develop the present ones. And for that, of course, ASHRAE is keen to participate in every effort, taking care of, taking in account their previous experience. But an ideal registry must be complete and audited. That's one of the difficulties. Not sure if it must be compulsory, but it must be complete. It should be cycle by cycle, because that's the only way to ask questions to data. Otherwise, we have only aggregate information and it's impossible to know details. Should be coherent in the different member states. Borut mentioned one proposition that was a simple one that we made last year of a core data for countries that are starting the system, because those that are already established can take that data from their registry, and covering long-term offspring characteristics. And deciding once for all in EU the scope of the directive, because if we are talking only of tissue and cells, that's a different thing that include clinical and even basic data in the registry that is outside the directives, and it's not clear, and the discussion is more or less endless. So new perspectives that should be or would be an ideal registry in the present situation and development of what we have already, and starting in new countries that have no registry yet. Now it's vision for the future. Vision. we have a single European code now in place for donations, but we have no idea of the donors. And the existence of a single European code for donors would be important. I think that in other fields too, but in ART could be one way to have an additional safety use of egg donors, for instance. If you know that a lady has already donated eggs 10 times, that would be important to create even some kind of limit as a safety procedure. But we have no such a code. And another even more visionary idea that we published last year was in the AIT field the attribution of an European code to any individual entering the AIT system, because that could allow to follow all the material, biological material originated by the man or woman, and if the couple split or if the family changes, the traceability would be complete all over Europe. But that's again visionary idea for, let's say, 20 years. To have common positions in core issues is also intuitive. I just put here some question marks. To define strict rules on economic compensations to donors, because it's again very heterogeneous and diffuse in some countries. To adopt certain realistic approach about virus screening in partner donation, for instance, about air quality that we talk about, because when we speak about air quality, we always have the lab in mind, but then after that, all the material goes through the vagina of the lady, and the air quality is not assured. So there is something different in our field also in the restrict regulations. And again, that's one of my suggestions always, to limit the number of oocyte donations as a safety system for the ladies. How to go to this networking? Again, no real news. Reinforce, that is very important, reinforce the needs for ART expertise in the competent authorities, because there are countries with a specific competent authorities, but most of them are ART is a small part, section, one person duty or something in a big competent authority, and that makes difficult to have all this perspective and all this vision. How to do that in practical terms about construction opportunities of exchanging perspectives in meetings during the EU meetings with the competent authorities, informal, formal, systematic email, systematic video conferences. That's the usual way, and I think that is not technically difficult if the decision is taken. So, as final remarks, and it's my conclusions, the specificities of ART and the importance of its final product must be well defended in the the global world of tissue and cells. There are many relevant interests that would be more strongly managed with common positions from competent authorities in this field. Different member states could, of course, benefit from the experience of others and to develop a stronger network among ART competent authorities would be an important step in the dialogue with the EU authorities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carlos. Speaking as the competence authority for ART in the UK, I agree. So let's take some questions on ART more broadly for Borat or Carlos. Or any observations? Richard.
Sorry. Thanks. Thanks very much for the very interesting presentations. My question was just to Borat around from Eshra. Has there been a discussion? I know that you said that there's a meeting on November and December in Slovenia. But has there been any discussion or guidance from Eshra as to around the kind of indicators that either from a clinical side or a laboratory side, you know, that clinics should be collecting, so or kind of key performance indicators, and you know, any guidelines as to, you know, a standardized, you know, kind of indicators, and also any standardized indicators that clinics should present as well, because I know there's many different ways of presenting success rates, say, or indicators in clinics. So has there been any discussion around that, or is there any plans for guidance around that? Because I think competent authorities would very much benefit from the expertise of the groups like Eshra around these kind of areas.
Yes, thank you for this question. So it was one of the slides that I removed before, Eshra was involved in the project with other societies, Alpha, which is also very active around the world. They're trying to come to get a consensus about the KPI indicators that could show the performance, the quality of lab performance. It is a paper that is published in two journals. You can follow this paper. It is there are several indicators established, also benchmarks. The problem that we see is that if you have a small clinical program, then you can get very big variability in these indicators. So it is the question how collect this data, how to interpret them, what is a reference group. It much influence on the patient's age, indication of infertility treatment. So it is not decided yet now what is the optimal reference patient group which could be used, for example, for permanent following the laboratory performance. One of such indicator that we usually use it also internally in IVF is the fertilization rate per ICSI procedure, where we think that there is a big personal influence on the success. This, I think, is at the moment the only indicator that you can very quickly get information about the quality of the training of the staff, quality of lab performance. There are several other performance indicators, but you have to evaluate them together with clinical parameters, not only a specific parameter.
Christina.
Thank you for the opinion from the competent authority. I'm competent authority in Italy, and I am very astonished to hear again that in the field of ART, where you have by definition clinicians that work with a product that is donated and therefore have in their hands the clinical follow-up of the baby, of the mother, and so on, claim to have difficulties to talk with a competent authority from tissues and cells. If I make the example of all the other tissues and cells that are produced in a tissue establishment like skin and bones and so on, there we really have the problem to know what is going on after the tissue has been released to an end user, because we can't get back clinical data, since the directives do not require that the tissue establishments really bring back some clinical follow-up data, except if they have a serious adverse reaction. So I see there a big problem, and we are really doing the best to invent, to try to influence the new directives to give us competent authorities of the tissue establishments that evaluate the preparation process of the end product to also have some data back from the recipients. So I'm a little bit astonished that this is already working in the normal standard treatment cycle. And why is it so difficult to harmonize this evaluation of the clinical data, make them available and not heterogeneous, and therefore also being able to influence the directive that should give you more legal power to exploit the many data you have that are really useful for everybody, not only to the patients and the donors?
Thank you, Kristen. Well, we are 28 countries, and the legal system and the application of the legal systems are completely different. When I said that there are lots of dropouts, I mean that some countries have complete coverage and some countries have a volunteer system, and the volunteer system, by definition, will bring in, for sure, the best centers or the centers with best results, that's for sure, and they lose what happened to the geography of many of the patients, either inside the country or outside when the couples go abroad or come back to their original countries. So that's one of the strong needs that the competent authorities make compulsory and efficient any system. And that's one of the ESHRE concerns that we always try to send letters to some of the health ministers in some countries. We have some countries that have no registry at all, and in other countries their system that was settled some years ago didn't answer to the needs of the core homogeneous data. So it's a long-term pressure, and I hope that the European unit push the competent authorities to put one of these systems in work. As I said, I think that one of the weaknesses is not enough strength or expertise in ART inside the competent national authorities of some countries, but that's my guess.
We've got time for one more question.
It's more a comment than a question. From my point of view, ART stays better than other tissue and cells regarding the follow-up. But in my vision, this follow-up will be better when each country will be able to mix the registries, to have first a registry and after that to mix the registries between.
For example, the ART registry with the birth registry, for example. Because till then, we will have a gap between the treatment. And from my point of view now, the majority of the legislation is focused on the laboratory part. We need to focus also on the clinical part and the follow-up part. Thank you.
Yeah, first get a registry, I think, if there isn't one in place. So, Nigel, do you want to say anything on that? Because I've got a few words.
If I may, to come back to Christina and to Romania, just very briefly, if you look at what's happened in France or the UK with our ART registers, we're arriving after 13 years of work at having a mature system in France, which we will revise once it is working because it's not satisfactory. It's a hard, long process to set them up. I think the UK has just revised its system as well. That's the first thing. So it's not easy to build these systems, and certainly the experience that we have should be made available. At least I would like that to happen through our data dictionaries and so on. That's the first thing. The second thing is that if we're talking about long-term follow-up of people born after ART, I'm not sure that everywhere everyone is going to go sit down and say, yes, I think it's perfectly all right to have specific follow-up for these people because they were born that way. I think there will be people in Europe who will go, wait a minute, no, that's not acceptable. We can't imagine that specific follow-up. There will be a debate around that. It's not necessarily simple. And the third thing is that I think with the evolution of information systems in healthcare across Europe, and we will be having more opportunities to start using routine care data that is collected in 20 years' time, for example, and we will be able to mine that information to find out what is happening to people and so on. And there will be other ways of going about evaluating things. And I think we need to keep our eyes on that particular aspect of the evolution of our connected, especially in the UK, information systems. That's
good point, Nigel. And Catherine, I'm sorry, I overlooked you.
So, first of all, thank you very much for the nice presentations. And thank you for the swap analysis. And it was, I think it was very good to hear there were no threats coming up. But under strengthens, you mentioned one of these you mentioned were better controlled environment in the lab. And I would have been more happy if you have mentioned that the clinical outcome was improved. But I, as a competent authority, I could be worried if we strengthen the requirement for something which there's no evidence for example, going from D to C in the background in environment. I don't think we ever have had any confirmation of a better clinical outcome or better results with when strengthening the environment in the lab. And as Christina mentioned, I really hope that the change in the direct coming changes will make it clear for us as competent authorities that we have to assess the clinical outcome. Because that must be the first thing and the best thing. And coming from Denmark, I have to say you both mentioned home insemination and direct distribution of sperm across Europe. And I can give you the information that Denmark has changed our law. So, and it came into entry the 1st of April this year. And it means that from the 1st of July next year, it is not possible to distribute direct to private persons in Europe. And from 2019, the 1st of July, it will not be possible to export sperm from. So, thank you.
Congratulations to Denmark. Well done. Okay, just broaden that a bit more than now. So just to say a few words just to wrap up this session. So I think we all knew before we started this morning that we have good relationships with the professional societies representing the different interests. I think by the end of the session, I think we knew even more the importance of strengthening that relationship, and that really came through today. I think it's fair to say that whether we're working in practice or whether we're working in regulation and inspection in competent authorities, our interests are aligned in the interests of people and patients. And I think it's true to say that we're stronger together, particularly if we walk in the same direction at the same pace. And I think as a consequence of that, we'll all do our work more effectively. So would you join me in once more thanking the speakers from this morning's session? Thank you very much. Okay, so I think we've been pretty successful in making up some time, so we're about 35 minutes late. Apologies to our closing panel, particularly to Mr. Almeida Souza. I apologise that we've kept you waiting a little bit, and to Carlos. So I think we're going to have a few words now, and then we can go for lunch. Is that right, Nigel?
Is that right, Carlos?
Yeah.
Professor Carlos Plancha, the coordination of the Arctics, joint action Dr. Nigel Strang, the European Society for Blood and Marrow Transplantation, Dr. Ellen McGrath, the European Society of Human Reproduction and Embryology, Dr. Borut Kovacic, distinguished guests, dear all, we have been gathered here these 2 days for such a productive joint action, and we are honored by the presence of all experts in this field. Your efforts must certainly go on, so I would say that Arctic's thinking should be kept in our minds, shaping continuous our efforts on assisted reproductive technologies and hematopoietic stem cells activities. A special word for those who contribute for this meeting to be held in such a short time. And for all, thank you very much.
Well, dear participants, I was hoping that the Dr. Eric Correia would also be here to close the session, but unfortunately he was not able to do it, even with this slight delay. And so I'd like to close by showing you some numbers from this meeting. So we had overall at the peak of the attendance 47 people between residents and faculty. Mainly from the competent authorities and a few stakeholders from the society, scientific professional societies. It was a very enjoyable meeting, I would say, and of course it's again a place to acknowledge all the speakers and the participants of this meeting, to the Portuguese Parliament that was able to provide the conditions to have this meeting here in this wonderful room, and then the visit and the dinner last night. And of course, it's again a place to thank the organization from the CNPMA and IPST staff, Patricia Silva, Ana Rita Laranjeira, Felipe Brazão, and also Paulo Severino, and of course to the people behind the Arctic joint action as a whole from Agence de la Biomedicine. So I think there we have stressed a lot some conclusions, take home messages. It is very pleasant that people from different sides, or they converge in their visions towards what should be the future. So it's clear, I think, that these two fields that Artix is dealing with really require effective governance and regulation. Of course, and this is to the benefit of the beneficiaries. These competent authority missions that have been identified, and of course many of the things that we say are specific to the field, there are of course many components that are can be used in both fields. But particularly also in this morning session, it was evident that was a bit convergence saying that these missions need to be beyond the strict requirements defined by the European Tissue and Cell Directives. And of course, this, to be able to do it, there's the need to increase expertise, and this is based on this very positive interaction between competent authorities, professional societies, that, as was said, may be in different, they may stand in different sides geographically, but are joining to the same goal. And so for this, and to increase all of this, it's very clear also that we need to increase, it's already there, and I think the what happened in Denmark, in like Ann-Kathrin just said, it was in fact also because there was a lot of this interaction and explanation, and sometimes some pressure, sometimes some answers, but it was in the end the result, it was very positive that how all the all of this happened. And so it's a bit to make this possibility more obvious or more easy to happen, that we would like to work now as a, this a follow-up of the end of this joint action on forming this network. And again, I would stress, of course, it will be very important to have more, let's say, more capabilities to be with an official support, and because we saw the need for regarding the registers, the data management. So clearly, there is the need for resources, and this will be important, but. This network, I think it's already starting, has already started, in fact, but consciously, probably, we can start it now, and then we will see how we can make it more official. So I'd like to thank everybody for the participation. Goodbye to all of you and have a safe trip back home. After lunch, yeah, after lunch. Now we have lunch for the ones we can stay. We have lunch now. Yes?
Okay. We're all going to go home. But on November the 14th and 15th, there is a competent authority meeting of the Tissue and Cells Group in Brussels. And on the running order of this meeting will be the question of the competent authority network in ART and possibly in cord blood banking in HSC. It might be helpful. It might not be. It might be obstructive that if the competent authorities were to write, if the competent authorities were to write to Stefan van der Spiegel and to say that they would be interested in seeing this question discussed and debated and they would be supportive of the creation of such a network, it would probably help us have the support of the Commission afterwards. I don't know if you agree to do that, but do take it home, think about it, and if you feel able to do so, you might like to consider writing to him. Thank you.